Blackhawks fans, welcome into the Four Feathers podcast. We are on season 5, episode 2. It's Johnny Nani hosting here alongside Ron Luce. I see you got a little beverage there. Yeah, I think I won too.
Oh, little crack'em, Johnny. It's a Hawks happy hour. These are hashtag back. We're hashtag back. My koozie is actually still in my golf bag. That's when you know I'm transitioning to fall still, Johnny.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm right there with you, man. Hashtag crack 'em, and it's good to be on the microphone with you talking Blackhawks hockey.
Yeah, Hawks happy hour. It's good. I like this kind of time of night. Like you tweeted out earlier, Monday Night Football coming up. But hey, before that, get your Blackhawks fix in here with us at the Four Feathers podcast. A lot going on in the world of the Blackhawks. Training camp is underway. We've got some practices under our belt, even a scrimmage. Some exciting stuff coming out from that. We'll discuss a bunch of storylines such as lineup, leadership, the scrimmage, like I mentioned, culture, and the captain situation and more. So tune in here, Four Feathers Podcast. You can give us a follow on the socials at Four Feathers Pod and at OnTap Sportsnet. And if you're watching the show, go jump over to the YouTube page at OnTap Sportsnet there and subscribe there. Get the alerts on as well, so you know when we go live. We love you, Twitter people, but unfortunately, we cannot see your comments. Our streaming service here just doesn't let us do it. So jump over to YouTube or Facebook, and then we can get your comments, and they'll be inserted right here below my name. So that does it for housekeeping, Ron. Let's dive in. The training camp underway, like I mentioned. We're 3 practices and a scrimmage into the books here. So initial first impressions here, I'll just let you take the ball and run with it.
I'm happy Hawks hockey is back, man. Like that's first and foremost at this point. I am so happy it's back. I don't care. You know, it's one of these things where you look around the Chicago landscape and you go, shit kind of sucks right now. I'm very lucky. My Cubbies are still playing meaningful baseball in September. I'm very thankful for that. You can catch the Dingers and the Cubs on Tap boys both live tonight. So be sure, again, like Johnny said, little bell button on the YouTube and you'll know when we go live. But Johnny, for my fall sports season, because the Chicago Bears are absolute monkey doo-doo at this point, I am so excited that Blackhawks hockey is back. And I don't give a rat's ass that it's just training camp. I don't give a rat's ass that, you know, there's not a ton of marquee names per se, aside from, you know, the Connor Bedards of the world and even, you know, the Taylor Halls. But it's back. It's back. And it's one of my favorite times of the year. So, Johnny, I think that's just my initial thought of training camp. We're back, baby. Blackhawks hockey is this close. And it feels so good.
Ron, I can't tell you how happy I was. I don't like players to be injured, but I couldn't tell you how happy I was to write a Blackhawks injury update on Thursday when Taylor Hall and a couple other forwards were not in attendance. And luckily that, you know, that's just a small issue. And it's not, like I said, it's not that I wish that players ever be injured, but in the game of hockey, a very physical game, this happens all the time. And it's gone all summer. You don't have any of that. We're writing about Connor Bedard projections on NHL 2024, you know, like, you know, what they project his career to be. That's all fine and dandy, but that's summer content. And now we are hashtag back to real hockey content. And I love it. It's great to see all the videos trickling out. I think everybody is, you know, really excited when you get Charlie Emiliotis, Ben Pope, and the likes out there firing off videos of obviously Connor Bedard, but even other names too, the guys that you're excited to see. And we've got a plethora of them to talk about here, as our guy Skoke says, because we are back. We are back. Thank you for tuning in. Jump in the comments like Skokes. We can feature him right here. That's YouTube on Tap Sportsnet. Go jump in there. All right, Ron, let's talk some storylines here and start with Taylor Hall. Outside of Connor Bedard, the big Blackhawks offseason acquisition. There's another one that came over in that as well that we're going to talk about. However, Taylor Hall was absent from the first 2 days of practice. Nothing too major, undisclosed kind of lower body injury. But more than that, he's back on the ice and he's playing alongside Connor Bedard. Thoughts on Hall?
He sure is. And Johnny, I think we all projected that, right? When he was acquired, it was, oh, he's a former first overall pick. He's a winger. He's going to look really good on Bedard's left side. This makes a ton of sense. But I think just from in general so far, even with a little bit of what we saw in the scrimmage today, and I know we're going to drill deeper into that, so I'm going to keep it high level here, but it looks natural because he's an elite player. Even though he's, you know, later in his career and maybe he's not going to give you the 100-point seasons that won him MVP trophies when he was a New Jersey Devil, he's still a player that knows how to play with elite talent. And that's what Connor Bedard is. And we know that's what Connor Bedard's going to be, at least, you know, this year, next year, and obviously even more so into the foreseeable future. it's going to be a very seamless transition for a guy like Taylor Hall to step in on that wing. And I think that's why we're so excited about it. And quite honestly, Johnny, I think from a lot of the highlights we saw, obviously there's only so much you can see from a scrimmage like this. It's not televised, what have you, but nobody looked out of place on that line. Taylor Hall looked like he effortlessly was keeping up with Connor Bedard. So A, that means he's healthy, which is great. And B, I think it's a duo that we're going to see together on that first line almost all season.
Unmute there a little bit. Yeah, we're right. Good analysis there, Ron. You know, Taylor Hall, I'm not too concerned about it. You know, it's something they say you didn't want to talk about lower leg injury and stuff. But I think you gave the breakdown there of how he fits into this team, where we kind of projected him. So good to see him actually just out there, though, in driving play. And we'll get to the scrimmage in detail a little bit more later. That'll be our next kind of segment here on the show. But elsewhere, we've kind of got lines formulating here, Ron. And I think you had a guy you wanted to spotlight in this. Because I think, you had said, okay, we have an expected Hall up there on the top. There's another guy, part of that unit. You got thoughts. Let's hear him.
I do have thoughts. It's a guy that, Johnny, admittedly, when we did the Four Feathers episode at this time of the year, it was right when all these names had been acquired. Hall and the other guy we're going to talk about that came over from Boston, right? They were already here. But there was a few other moves made after the draft as of July 1st and so on. He was really the only major addition the Hawks made in free agency. And it was a 2-year deal, which was right in the wheelhouse of what Kyle Davidson was kind of looking for. But I think Ryan Donato is going to be a much more important player to this team than people give him credit for coming in. Because I listened back to that episode today and remember asking Tony, you know, hey, what are your thoughts on a guy like Donato? What are your thoughts, Tony? Like I asked him flat out and he went, well, I see Max Domi out there, and this doesn't make me feel anything. Well, if the Hawks wanted Max Domi back at that number for 1 year, they would have done it. I think they like what Ryan Donato brings. Donato has played up and down the lineup throughout his career at the NHL level, and he has shown he plays well with talented players while also being able to support himself in a depth position. For example, the last 2 years in Seattle, 14 and 16 goals in those two seasons. He's a guy that can score from depth. And quite honestly, Johnny, he's young enough where I think he's a guy we're going to see this season. They're already giving him the first look on that right wing with Bedard and with Hall. That's critically important. What's also critically important, he can play all three forward spots as well. He can play center. There was a lot of rumbling that when he was acquired, he was going to be the second line center, which we've obviously learned. There's another name that we're going to be talking about on that second unit at the center position. But I just, to me, folks, at this point in time, it's not even necessarily the hype train of what he's doing in camp. It's just keep your eyes on Ryan Donato, because I really do think the fact he was the only major true free agent acquisition, and people are going to sit here, well, they got Hall and they got Foligno and they got Perry. Those were all via trade. And then they signed them. If in the case of, you know, the two older guys that they acquired the rights for, this is the only guy they really went out and actually spent money on day one of free agency. They clearly like his game. Expect him to be a guy that's going to contribute a lot more than people I think expect in the top six this season, John.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I like that kind of breakdown of it. And you're right. That is the only free agent, because you got to go and look at the technicalities in GM Ron. I know that's right up your alley. So you're all about that, but it's very true. And it shows a level of interest in, you know, how they covet certain players and skill sets. So I think that's important to acknowledge there when it comes to Ryan Donato. And I will just say, I just was a little bit surprised because, you know, Tyler Johnson is a veteran that's been around here for a couple seasons now, and he had the neck injury that did sideline him for a period of time, but came back and was, you know, pretty playing high up in that lineup. Granted, not a very skilled lineup in years past. However, I thought he would have been the one to stick on that right wing there. Because, you know, when they were tweeting out the lines from Thursday and Friday, he was on the right, and then it was Taylor Hall or Donato was on the left, and it kind of looked kind of like placeholding, but then Johnson is the one that goes and gets bumped down on that. Donato stays up. So just interesting wrinkles. That was like kind of the only like little surprise that I had there when it comes to lines formulating. Ron, as we're on this lineup, though, you can go and look up and down. You might have another third line take to have here. And obviously we're going to have Lucas Reichel probably playing the 2C. We'll get to him when we talk about the scrimmage more there. But I just looked across that fourth line. Nick Foligno, Jason Dickinson, and Corey Perry. The Blackhawks now have forward depth, Ron.
They do. And it feels weird to say that, right, Johnny? Because I think people look at this team coming into the year and they say, well, this team is still going to suck. And I think we all agree. This team still has growing to do, especially with a lot of these names that are in this forward group. It's a very young forward group outside of the aforementioned Foligno, Perry, and Taylor Hall. But it's refreshing having forward depth, because I think, you know, for what it's worth, that forward depth goes beyond that fourth line even at this point, Johnny. Mackenzie Entwistle, who scored in the scrimmage today, and obviously we're going to get to here. You know, a lot of these guys that we saw in the bottom six last season who at least gave good, you know, good enough, you know, I guess play, for lack of a better term, but good enough stuff on tape. Boris Kachuk, even Reese Johnson as a physical kind of grindy fourth line forward. Even if they get hurt this year, Johnny, I am not scared of their forward depth for the first time in quite a while.
Right.
And that says something about what Davidson's done with this team.
Right, and you got another guy that's not in that mix, but a veteran, you know, kind of defensive first type forward, Colin Blackwell. He's not even appearing in these because he is also kind of on the sideline with undispecified lower body, although I think that might be related to the sports hernia surgery that he had end of last year. Maybe they're just taking it slow as he comes back in there. But our guy Voodoo brings up a good point. A lot of trade depth possibility. You know what? The Maple Leafs back during, you know, a couple of years ago playoff run, they had traded for Colin Blackwell because they wanted that sort of fourth, you know, whatever, forward defensive depth. Right now, when you're sitting here looking at it, you know, Kyle Davidson isn't ruled out shaking things up before the season even gets underway. Obviously, we saw them acquire Dickinson right before last season. We saw them get Jared Tenorti off of waivers. Well, guess what? There might be a few other teams out there that are looking for players like this. Now you're in a position of strength to trade, and that's why that depth is important.
100%. And it just, if nothing else, Johnny, you give yourself options. And to me, that's the best thing any professional sports organization can do, is have enough in the back pocket to either A, you're making, you know, a run at the Stanley Cup. Look at all those Blackhawks teams that won the Cups and how many guys played critical roles as depth forwards in those teams. And even look at it from the side of what the Hawks are doing now as a rebuilding franchise, having that depth to be able to trade. And Johnny, even the guys that, think back to last season, folks, you guys all remember the episode. We gave you our 30 plus reasons of why to watch Blackhawks hockey last year.
How to get through it.
One of those being, you never know what's going to happen from a depth perspective, especially after the trade deadline. And that's exactly what the Hawks have this year. Because realistically, Foligno could be gone at the deadline if a team really likes him for a cup run, Perry being the same way. We could see a lot of these young guys, Johnny, later in the season. Having that depth is incredibly critical to keep this team at least competitive, in the sense of you're growing for the future, not necessarily winning hockey games per se when it matters most. So lots to consider. But like Voodoo said, whether it's trade possibilities or even just having guys that can step in and are NHL ready to play if injuries occur, which are natural in any sport, it's refreshing for the Blackhawks to put themselves in a position with options.
Right, and you talk about those options that could be shipped off. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in another veteran goalie. Mrazek isn't durable and don't need to rush. Komeso Skok says that. I think that's a great assessment there of the goalie spot. We all know about Peter Mrazek's injury history and obviously just kind of being a tank goalie himself. So I agree. Should not rush Komeso. Let him play in the A all year, be that number one guy there. So we'll see what happens. But once again, the Blackhawks, if they do want to pull off a move before the season comes here, they could probably trade from their well of depth forwards there. I want to move this now back to the back end. I feel like we've talked a lot about up front because Connor Bedard's a forward, Lucas Reichel's a forward. Let's talk back end, and this is where I think the Hawks are probably going to have some struggles, and this is why I still project them as a 7th, 8th place team in the Central Division. But there's a guy that you like, another young guy here. Let's hear it and who it is.
There is, Johnny. It's a guy that, you know, it makes me feel like it validates that we're all good, smart hockey minds here at Four Feathers. And this is why people should listen along with us, because we're not just a bunch of Chicago assholes talking out of our asses here. At the end of last season, in his small stint with the team after signing out of college, I got to watch Wyatt Kaiser live, I believe twice at the United Center in that short stint. I liked his game. Like, he was a guy I remember walking away from the night of the Jonathan Toews game, and everybody's like, wow, that sucks that, you know, this is the end of the Toews era. And I was like, yeah, that was great. That was great. But when we're talking about the team looking forward, did you notice Wyatt Kaiser? And they're like, why were you giving a shit about Wyatt Kaiser? And I'm like, because he looked good. He looked comfortable. I think that was what it was for me, Johnny, because you see some of these defensemen come out of college and make a huge impact, and then that next season they kind of regress. Ian Mitchell's a great example of that. But this year, Johnny,
did he ever make an impact? Let's be honest.
Not really. Let's be fucking, you know, whatever. But Kizer comes out, right? Third round pick from a couple of years ago, played a bunch of, you know, Minnesota Duluth was where he played his college hockey. And he looked really good in that 9-game sample size with the Blackhawks last season. So much so they were willing to burn a year of his entry level contract. Now, coming into this year, he was a guy I said, I was like, I like Wyatt Kizer. I think we could see a lot of Wyatt Kizer this year. I thought we'd probably see him more so on like the third pairing. I said, but I think he had an outside shot at the second pairing. Well, he's gone and metaphorically spit in my face and said, you know what? No, fuck you, Ron Luce, because I can be on the first pairing. He's been running with Seth Jones in training camp. That's a huge spot to play in this lineup that we admittedly thought it was going to be Alex Vlasic all year, who's now in that third pairing spot right now, adjacent of Nikita Zaitsev. So, you know, Kizer to me is such a guy that, especially for this season, Johnny, it could really cement himself as one of these guys, right? Like, they could legitimately have a top four of homegrown talent in like 2 years. And Voodoo's bringing it up here in the comments section, right? You look at the last two first-round picks on defense in Korchinski and Allen. You add them to the Kizer scenario. You've still got Seth Jones until the end of time. You've got Murphy for a few more years. This defensive unit, like you said, Johnny, still going to be rough this year. But a guy like Wyatt Kizer gives me excitement because it's not just the marquee names anymore on the blue line that people are watching.
Yeah.
It's a guy like Kizer who relatively flew under the radar for the last three seasons when he was in college, who's now going to come in and has Richardson's on record. Some of the other players are on record about Kizer. He has stood out in training camp, Johnny. Do not be surprised if he makes the team right out the gate. And on top of that, stays on that top pairing with Seth Jones for maybe a 20 to 25 game sample size.
Right. Yeah. That would be exciting. And you know, Ron, I do think it's important that he does kind of cement himself. I'm not saying he has to take over and say that he's a top two defenseman right now, but I do think it's really important for him to establish that he is here to stick and stay at the NHL level and be effective in that and not be getting burned all the time. Because guess what? While I agree with this take right here that Korchinski, Kizer, Allen give me hope. That's our guy Voodoo chiming in on the Blackhawks pipeline of defensemen. Just keep in mind that defensemen take a while to develop. They really do. It's hard to transition from juniors or the A to the NHL level. It's just a whole different beast down there. You're defending the best scorers in the world, right? That's why they play in the NHL. We have seen time and time and time again where we have these prospects. Ooh, remember we had Barstool Chief on this fucking show, the second ever episode, and he was all about Ian Mitchell, future captain. You see how that kind of shit pans out? And these guys are in a different tier because when you get drafted higher, obviously a bigger, you know, kind of like, you know, what Ian Mitchell is a second round guy. So you're talking about a little bit up in tier of talent there. No one's a guarantee though. So I think it's really important for a guy like Wyatt Kizer to step in and cement himself this year if he is going to get that extended opportunity. And then also, if you're a big Kevin Korchinski fan, really excited about it, from what I'm hearing out of training camp, I would not be shocked if he is going back to juniors very soon into the season. And don't be mad about that. It could be a good thing. There's no rush. There's no pressure. Don't overcook this guy. We've already seen them do that and rushing other guys up, granted, in the forward spot with like a Kirby Doc. So just same thing, 19 years old, right? Let it breathe and have some patience there on the blue line and let that be the area of weakness this year, along with the goaltending. 100%. You're going to have your flashes of there of good, some solid veteran play. And then guys like Wyatt Kizer coming up and hopefully cementing themselves, but it's not all coming together at once just because Connor Bedard is here. I just want to make that known for all Blackhawks fans. And that's how you should view it. Not saying that I'm always right, but to not get up for the letdown, so to say, that's how you should view this defensive group.
And Johnny, right now you are absolutely 100% correct because defensemen do take a lot longer. And I think that's why a guy like Wyatt Kizer for this year is the perfect guy to focus on and get excited about and watch his growth. He played 3 years in college. He's got a lot more hockey under his belt at a higher competitive level than a Kevin Korchinski does right now. That's just fact. It's not even trying to bash Kevin Korchinski. I personally think we have a better chance of seeing Nolan Allen this season than we do Kevin Korchinski for an extended period of time at the NHL level. And I think that's just because of what he also brings to the game, right? Allen, the more stay-at-home physical defenseman, I think he's made a lot of impact on Luke Richardson. My take being, I think Luke Richardson sees a lot of himself as a player.
Chad Luke Richardson loves himself some Nolan Allen.
I think he sees Nolan Allen as the little reincarnation of the type of player he was Chad for Nolan so Allen. Long. Yeah, Chad Nolan Allen, right? But, you know, to me, I think the perfect thing for Korchinski this year is to go back to Seattle and dominate the WHL for a year. Like, he was good last year, obviously well above a point per game player last year. But I mean, go in this year and be a 100-point defenseman type domination. Because if he goes in and does that, he's clearly ready for at minimum the AHL, if not the NHL.
Right.
I think they should have done that with Kirby Dach. Kirby Dach should have gone back to Saskatoon. At the time, yeah. He should have gone back to Saskatoon and dominated for a season in the WHL. We could see Kevin Korchinski if the Seattle has a bad year because they're gassed and they might lose a lot of guys because of that deep run they had in winning the WHL last year. Maybe we get to see Kevin Korchinski for 10 or 12 games at the end of the year if they get knocked out early.
Right.
So it's not that we won't see him. I think we might even see him for 3 or 4 games at the start of the season just to get him a taste. But ultimately, I agree with you. Don't be upset if he goes back to Seattle because it's only good for his development. They're not going to be competitive this year. They're not winning anything this year. I'd rather Kevin Korchinski develop into that number one defenseman we all hope he'll become, right, than them try to rush him like they have with every other single mother effing prospect over the last decade.
Yeah.
Let him develop properly.
You know, I think they're finally doing it right, though, because I like the way that they, you know, 2 seasons ago, Alex Vlasic came up after he was done at Boston and then played right away. And then it's like, oh, wait, is he just going to be here full time? Because he was there at the start of last year. And then they put him back in Rockford for the whole damn year. And what, he didn't come up sure until did. Like the very, very end when they needed it. And they had, you know, after the trade deadline and stuff like that. So I think the organizational approach is shifting better, but I just hope that they don't, you know, rush that through when it comes to a guy like Kevin Korchinski. All right, that'll wrap up the back end here. Ron, let's get into the scrimmage today, because that was exciting. And it was Connor Bedard and Lucas Reichel stealing the show. I wrote up a little post about this over at ontapsportsnet.com. Go and check it out. All of the highlights are there and a little bit of my analysis alongside of it. So, Ron, each of these guys pots a pair of goals. Bedard and the red team win 3-2. But I'll just go and give you the best line from my breakdown of it. Sure, Connor Bedard and the red team may have won 3-2, but the real winner here is the future of the Blackhawks.
Johnny, and I read that line in your article, and I smiled because I felt the exact same way. You know, it's funny. I already saw some people on Blackhawks Twitter kind of with the, I will call it, the old man yells at cloud take of, oh, it's just a it's a scrimmage. Nobody's trying hard. That's not the point. The point is that these two young players who are largely looked at as the face of your franchise for potentially the next 10 to 12 years.
One and 2C as of right now, right?
Exactly. Your top 6 centers as of right now are both able to individually show out for their respective teams, are both almost able to kind of compete internally. And for those that follow us at Cubs on Tap and listen, this is something that we've talked about the Cubs starting rotation as pitchers, to compete against each other internally to get better. I think we're kind of seeing that a little bit with a guy like Lucas Reichel right now, with Connor Bedard in the fold. And yes, I get it. This wasn't top defense. You know, these weren't, you know, guys giving them hard checks and shit. That's not the point. They look confident and they look comfortable. And because they're so young and they already look confident and comfortable, means it's going to be a big season of growth. As Voodoo said with the last comment here, the 2023 season is at all levels about development and growth. Part of that development and growth is the guys that are your next line of stars looking good and being confident as young players. Johnny, they both did that today with 2 goals apiece.
Right, absolutely. And you know what? I think the Connor Bedard hype has been talked about so much, and we are going to continue talking about it. But we did a very extended segment on that because he was participating in that Tom Curver's Prospect Showcase. That's kind of what we broke down from a play standpoint on last week's episode. So go and listen to that for a little bit more Connor Bedard specific talk, because he had 3 goals in that game. We broke them all down. Let's talk Lucas Reichel, because this guy, just, you know, last week when Kyle Davidson kicked off training camp with his media availability, it said that Lucas Reichel is NHL ready and he will be playing center this year after playing, you know, he played center in the A last year, but when he came up to the NHL level, primarily played on the wing, understandably. I believe at one point, I don't know if it was Luke Richardson, someone had, you know, talked about it, like, you know, we were making jokes about his weight and how he was, like, you know, getting thrown around like a rag doll, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that was like one of the hits that he took in a game against Nashville or something like that. Well, guess what? They told him, like Baker Mayfield did to defenders, get your weight up, son. Get your weight up. And he did over the summer. He looks stronger. He looks more solid on his skates. And playing through the center, and then you know, on ice adjustments. They said, don't get right back on the ice right away. Go and do that. So he got his weight up. And then back on the ice, he was working on his defensive game. He's working on faceoffs. Now, I don't have too much analysis on the faceoffs, so we'll have to see as preseason rolls into regular season as it comes on that front. But defensively, it looked a lot better, and it led to one of his goals, too, riding through the neutral zone today. So, honestly, bigger takeaway from this for me, even though Connor Bedard's were a little more highlight reel, Lucas Reichel also had one himself that was pretty nasty. But that Lucas Reichel adjusting to center is my biggest takeaway from the scrimmage today.
100%. Again, Johnny, I think it just goes back to the point that I made. He looked comfortable, right? Center's a hard position. By far the hardest forward position in the NHL. That's why they always say, hey, if you're going to draft forwards, draft centers, because the worst case scenario, they don't work at center, you bump them to the wing. It's not the other way around very often where a natural winger comes back to play center, per se. Obviously, Brandon Saad and Patrick Kane did it in those exploratory years for the Blackhawks because they needed a second-line center, but that's neither here nor there. To see him, like you said, Johnny, right, take the coaching that the front office, that the coaching staff, that everybody gave him and said, go get bigger, go get stronger, work on your defensive game. He looked NHL ready at the end of last season. I mean, we saw it. Out of his, 18 points or 16 points that he had at the NHL level, all but three of them came in that last call-up stretch down at the end of the year there playing with Athanasiou and Philip Kurashev. But they let him play the wing because that was the easier transition into the NHL at the time. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Johnny. To see him adjust, play a quality center, look comfortable playing in the middle of the ice today as that center on that top line for Team White, it to me is by far the biggest takeaway and something that, especially here in preseason, it's going to be all eyes on Lucas Reichel and how he adjusts to playing that center spot.
Right. Okay. Now we've covered Lucas Reichel. I like that. I think that's a good breakdown of it here. Last bit on that, our guy Voodoo says, we know Bedard will be the centerpiece, but guys like Reichel, Kaiser, Allen, Moore, et cetera, will be the important part of contention. One man can't win a cup. I think you saw that. Go and trace back to the 2010 team. Just go and look at that and look at all the depth.
And, guys and trace right now to the Edmonton Oilers and what right. they're going through with Connor McDavid.
Right, perfect. Exactly. For the opposite example of that. Okay. Let's talk now flanking Bedard, because we can go in depth here now with Taylor Hall and Ryan Donato and what they did alongside Connor Bedard, because each played a factor in his goals today during the scrimmage. Ron, break it down.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they both got active. You know, Donato, a guy that's not afraid to go into the corners. And, you know, it's funny. We think about all those years when, like, Jonathan Toews was a lot of times the guy on a line that would go into the corner. And that's why Brandon Saad was such a success playing with Toews, because he could be that winger to go into the corners and let Toews be a little more of that offensive center out in front. Connor Bedard's nasty. And, like, I want to say it was Ryan Donato that actually had the quote today. And I believe Ben Pope tweeted it out. I actually bookmarked it, I believe. And he mentioned about Bedard how, you know, you got to be ready to play with him at all times because he's going to make passes and take shots that 95% of the players in the NHL aren't taking or aren't converting on. I mean, even today, just that little sauce pass he threw, you know, that didn't result in a goal, but there's not many guys in the league that make that pass and successfully make that pass. He's different. And that's why it takes special players sometimes to play on the wing of guys like him. They don't necessarily have to be the best NHL players. They just need to learn how to play with elite NHL players. And quite frankly, Connor Bedard loves Sidney Crosby. Look at what the Penguins did for all those years. He didn't have superstar wingers with him. He had Pascal Dupuis and Chris Kunitz because they knew how to play with him. Jake Guentzel is probably the best winger that Crosby's arguably ever had in his, you know, decade plus now in Pittsburgh. Hall and Donato both did a great job today learning how to play with Bedard, showing that they can keep up with him and be ready for those spectacular plays that he can make. And Johnny, both of them, like you said, factored into each of his tallies today and a Team Red win. So you got to be happy with the first look of what Hall and Donato look like on the wings flanking Bedard on either side.
Right. We might have ourselves a new look top line that, you know, like I said, a little surprise there on the right wing. I think we all expected Taylor Hall up there, but Ryan did not get to see him. And you know what? That was a teamwork, you know, teamwork makes a dream work, Ron, as we just talked about. It's going to take a whole team effort. Well, let's talk about some of the, you know, those guys right there. On the second goal that Connor Bedard scored, it was actually Taylor Hall fumbling a rush where if he would have been able to get it over to Connor, it probably would have been an easy looking one timer. However, Ryan Donato is the one that recovers the puck and then is able to, you know, Bedard slides down a little bit further into that left circle. Donato is able to feed it and boom, there you go. One timer, guys helping each other out. You know, Hall mistake on the first one. Doesn't matter. Ryan Donato's got your back. Connor Bedard's got the finish. So I loved seeing that at the scrimmage today. Last thing I'm going to mention, I didn't mention it in the article, but I got to mention it here because I like me some Mackenzie Entwistle. Yeah, his mom follows us on Twitter. So shout out Mrs. Entwistle if you're out there listening. Good for him scoring the first goal. Nobody tweeted a highlight of it. You know, I think Ben Pope reported that he scored that. You know, nobody's making a big fuss about it. Everybody's doing a ISO shift on Bedard every fucking, you know, play, which is understandable. I get it. I get it, Scott Powers. I get it, all the, you know, guys that are there covering it. But Kenzie Entwistle's a bubble guy on this roster here. It's good for him doing that because that just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But we'll bring it to you here at the Four Feathers podcast. Okay, Ron, let's talk about another acquisition. Not too much going on the ice in terms of scrimmage activities today for him. He was in there, but it didn't really factor into the scoring or anything like that. But Nick Foligno is a huge culture guy, and he might be the best leadership acquisition that they've made in a long time.
He really is, Johnny. And you know what? This was something that I remember vividly talking about with people when they would ask opinions, because I have a lot of friends, big shout out to my buddy Zach in the comments a little bit earlier as well, you know, that would just ask an opinion, right? We all talk hockey with each other. What do you think about this? What do you think about them? The big one was, what do you think about them getting Foligno? Obviously, everybody was excited about Taylor Hall. But I said, you got to remember, I think a lot of people forget Foligno was the captain in Columbus for a long time. Like, this is a former captain that's coming into this locker room, not just some guy that has been around the league a long time but never wore a letter or anything like that. He is highly regarded around the league for what he brings to a culture locker room in anywhere, really. It doesn't even matter where he's played. He's been that kind of culture guy in the locker room. I just, Johnny, it's such a – I know Davidson didn't make a lot of moves this year, but the moves he made were all incredibly strategic. Incredibly strategic.
I think they're all going to pay dividends in their own special way.
100%, right? Ryan Donato is the kind of guy that he's scrappy. He can play up and down the lineup. For a team like this, that's going to help them immensely, especially if injuries pile up. For, you know, Taylor Hall, he's a number one overall pick. He's a skilled player. That's going to be a great thing for Connor Bedard to learn from that aspect of handling the pressure of being a top pick in a big hockey market. I know Edmonton's a small city, but that hockey market is a bananas hockey market for the Oilers, right? So understanding and maintain or managing expectations. Corey Perry brought in to be a guy that's got a lot of experience, but also a guy that's going to bash your face in if you do anything stupid to number 98. Let's be honest. Hashtag crack him.
We'll crack your face like that.
Fact. And on top of that, then, Johnny, you bring in a guy who is going to replace a lot of lost leadership from a year ago, and a guy like Foligno. And it's good because, yes, everybody's, well, why didn't you just bring Jonathan Toews back? Well, Kyle Davidson made it very clear that he wants
this new regime. Can't play this year, by the way.
Yeah, he's not even playing this year. So, you know, but the, you know, it goes back to what Davidson said. He wants this new regime of players to create the leadership hierarchy, right? To take it, you know, kind of take possession of that locker room. Well, who better to learn from than a guy like Nick Foligno, who's a former captain, and Boston had no chance of re-signing. All you do is acquire his rights and you overpay him for one season when you got the ability. But every single guy they brought in is going to make this team better. Not just Connor Bedard. They're all guys that these youngsters are going to be able to learn from and take something from. And he, to me, Johnny, it might be the least flashy in terms of the name that came in, right? Perry, Hall, Foligno. But he's going to have the most impact from a leadership standpoint of the three names they brought in. And that alone for a very young Blackhawks team is going to be instrumental in their growth going into the future.
Well put. I just want to cite a couple examples to back this up. Works cited here, Ron. And my notes that I had about Nick Foligno when I was talking about how he's a big hashtag culture guy, and we're all about hashtag culture here at Four Feathers Pod, as you know. Okay. First one is practice Thursday when they're getting going. First one, they're doing the stretch circle around the center ice logo, and he is going tapping every single guy checking in on him there. That's one very small gesture, but it goes a long way. Enough for, you know, reporters notice it, talk about it, ask him about it after, things like that. Then on the ice during drills, I believe it was Thursday. It's Friday, I think. Friday's practice, they're doing more D-zone work, right? And Richardson noticed something. There was a mistake that was made. He didn't say exactly who made it, but there's a mistake that was made and something that he wanted to go and make a point of. He's not going to bark at guys, but he was going over there and said, hey, this is not what we do. This is how we're going to execute this in the system. And Richardson had explained that prior to going on the ice for the defensive zone sort of practice, he had talked to some of the veteran guys of these are the concepts that we want to nail down right here. And Richardson says then, before I or any of the other coaches even had a chance to go over and talk to him about it, Nick Foligno is already there, you know, getting in the guy's ear in a, you know, uplifting way, right? That's culture. That's exactly what we're talking about here. And I love Richardson's comment, by the way, after he goes, I asked then, Nick, is that what you're talking about? And he said, yeah. And he's like, hell if I know. They could have been talking about where they're going for lunch. But, you know, thought that was funny there. And, you know, both those guys, Luke Richardson, Nick Foligno, all about the culture there. And then there was the checking in on Connor Bedard. That was kind of made a big storyline because it included Connor Bedard, of course, over the offseason. But veteran guys taking, you know, 18-year-old coming into the league under their wing, inviting him over for dinner. All the kids, Nick Foligno's kids, are really excited to see him because obviously they've heard all about the Connor Bedard hype. They want to play mini sticks with them. Well, Connor Bedard says that he went undefeated versus Nick Foligno's kids in mini sticks. So if you go and check it out over at Four Feathers Pod on Twitter, this is why you should follow us on the socials. Just tooting our own horn right here blatantly. You know the fuck them kids Jordan meme? Well, yes. I had to put that over the Connor Bedard tongue out meme. So that's over there on Four Feathers Pod Twitter. Nick Foligno bringing about culture and great moments here, Ron.
Always. You love to see it. Again, just I think he's going to be a guy that we fall in love with as a fan base, Johnny, this season. And it's going to be one of those guys that when you look back in a few years and a guy like Connor Bedard is really successful and this team's hopefully winning games and they're playing meaningful hockey deep into the season, you're going to kind of look back and be like, man, remember Nick Foligno like that year with the Hawks? Like that was fun. You know, like I still think about some of that weird shit with some of the guys that these teams brought in over the years. Right. Like Remember when Andrew Brunette was a Chicago Blackhawk for a year? Like it's those kind of guys that, you know, are part of the fun of being a fan that you fall in love with as a player. And no matter where they go afterwards, you still kind of have that fandom toward them. To me, Nick Foligno is probably going to become a guy like that for a lot of Hawks fans this year.
Right. I think that's a great way to put it. And obviously, like I said, big addition to the Blackhawks hashtag culture here, him and Chad Luke Richardson leading that up. Team's going to be in a good place morale wise. I suspect. All right. We'll go real quick through this next one. No captain for the Blackhawks this year. We discussed kind of our reasoning behind that, why we felt that was the right decision here. But Ron, I want to talk about the confirmation by Kyle Davidson, then the reaction about two guys that may have been in this spot, and that being Seth Jones and Connor Murphy, both guys that I think were tossed around in discussions as, you know, fans like us, the writers, you know, kind of debating any shit. Seth Jones even in an interview with NHL.com where he said he would like to take the captaincy before the decision was announced by Kyle Davidson last Tuesday. So, Ron, in Seth Jones' response, it seems just a little bit miffed. I'm not going to go out and say that he was, you know, disapproving of the decision, but he said, you know, oh, it's an honor to wear one for an original six team. And then he goes, but at the end of the day, it's just a letter on the jersey. Okay, I get the sentiment behind that, but it just came off a little bit different. Whereas Connor Murphy says, hey, we have to lead as a group. Other guys have to step up. And we had a little taste of that last year when Jonathan Toews had his absences and could not suit up for various, you know, stretches of time due to his long COVID and immune response syndrome there. So I like the way Murphy responded to it a lot better. And I think this highlights why I think I would have gone with him instead of Jones. But I just wanted to talk about that because that became official. And then obviously these guys got asked about it at the start of training camp.
Yeah. I think too, with Murphy, like even just Hawk fans in general, I think we forget how long Connor Murphy's been a Blackhawk now. Like, you know, at the time he was the new guy on the block and he was still this up and coming younger defenseman. And now he's a seasoned vet. This dude's been around for, what is this going to be, his sixth season now, I think, with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's played in Chicago longer than any other place in his career now at this point, because of, you know,
and he spent a while with the Coyotes too.
And yeah, he was up and he came up at a very young age with, you know, then Phoenix, now Arizona. So, you know, I think they both had the right sentiment in mind with their responses, Johnny. I do agree though. I think there's a sense of disappointment that Seth Jones has that maybe he really does want to see. But I think at the end of the day, what the Blackhawks are allowing by saying we are not going to have a captain this season, there is nobody who is, I don't even think it's that nobody has earned it per se, right? It's not a negative, like, oh, there's nobody worthy of wearing the C. It's, hey, we just lost, you know, the longest tenured captain in Blackhawks history to an effective retirement, or at least a break because of the year absence coming for Jonathan Toews. We just lost this guy. We're going to let it breathe. this dude meant a lot to the organization. We're going to give him that honor that we're not just going to name his replacement a year after he departs. Instead, this is now that opportunity for Seth Jones to prove that he should be the C if he really feels that way, or Connor Murphy to step up and take that C, or if it is going to be Connor Bedard in a few years, like we discussed on our latest episode. It gives all of these guys now an opportunity to almost effectively try out and show, right, are you worthy of wearing the captaincy? Because yes, wearing an A is still a huge honor. And I think anybody that remembers those great Hawks teams knew the A wasn't changing every year until more recently. Every year it was Patrick Sharp and it was Duncan Keith. We always knew that. And yep, then if one of them got hurt, it was always Brent Seabrook, right? Like that, the leadership structure was there. Everybody knew what it was. Now this gives that the Blackhawks that opportunity to establish that. And I think they can lead as a group, just as Murphy noted. And eventually somebody's going to shake out as the captain. But for now, Seth, you're probably going to wear an A this year. Earn it. Earn it. If you're really that upset about it, earn it. I think that's what this, to me, makes of it, is that maybe Jones does care. And that's why there was a little salt in his response. Just go out and show them why you should wear it then, if they really believe that's the case.
So, Kyle Davidson himself used "let it breathe," and I think that was a perfect way to spin it on his end. And then the Blackhawks, they had, you know, posted a picture, you know, graphic sort of like a quote from Davidson's presser when he was talking about this to their Instagram or Twitter or something like that. And it was that, you know, "step up and earn it" was the caption there. And it was about, you know, Kyle Davidson's assertion that they weren't going to have a captain this year. That's all fine and dandy, and I think they handled it the right way PR wise, but I'll just fucking take a step back and say it. It's a placeholder. It's a time holder, a filler, until Connor Bedard is in the league long enough. He actually has some NHL games under his belt before they name him captain eventually, which maybe in like 2 years, I would imagine. So that's where we're headed. That's just my take on it. Let's move on to the next thing. All right. Some fun stuff from over the weekend, Ron. I was our enforcer. If you're not familiar with the Four Feathers crew here, he's not on this podcast. He did join for a show over the summer, but his work schedule is kind of crazy. So he'll chime in on the social medias and stuff like that. But our enforcer is Patrick Kaminsky. Great guy. Great. You know, he's been on the show in past, like I said, kind of randomly. But he is, you know, a great follow on Twitter. Go follow him at Kaminsky 2020. Excuse me, at Kaminsky 22. And he got married. He tied the knot over the weekend with his lovely now wife, Anna. I was at the ceremony and the reception. Tony was as well. It was a great time, very sports centric, because they are both very big Chicago sports fans.
Yes,
and there were plenty of Blackhawks references mentions. But the coolest thing, I thought, his intro music that he came out to introduce the bridal party to the reception when they all came down and did their grand entrances down like the stairs and everything like that, was the exact Hawks intro from the Cup years. Marilyn Manson's "The Beautiful People" into "Stranglehold" by Ted Nugent, like when the Hawks take the ice. And then it culminated with, by the time it was time to announce the bride and groom, Chelsea Dagger, of course. Stick taps to Kaminsky all around. Hey, congrats to the happy couple. And it was a great time. We posted a couple pictures from it over on our Twitter and Instagram. Go check them out there at Four Feathers Pod. But give our guy at Kaminsky 22 a follow. Now married man, Patrick Kaminsky. And Four Feathers enforcer, of course.
Absolutely. A great dude. I was very upset to not make it myself. I was invited, and I'm bummed I missed it, truthfully. As you mentioned, Pat Kaminsky, great guy. Anna's fantastic as well. She's around and hangs out with all of us when we get together as the Four Feathers crew as well. So big congratulations to them. But Johnny, he would have it no other way.
Right.
And as we would expect with Kaminsky.
Tony and I were talking about, how did that conversation go down? And it was like, oh, you know, the DJ asked, what do you want for your, you know, intro songs? And then Kaminsky already just told them.
It was already written out. It was
set there.
It needs to be this first, then this.
Yeah.
And then when we come out, it's this.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, why that order? He'll be like, go.
You wouldn't understand.
Yeah. Did you go to Blackhawks games during the Cup era? You did. You should fucking know this lineup then.
Yeah.
Like, that's Pat being Pat, but that's what makes Pat incredible. And as you noted, our enforcer over here at 4F.
Yeah, just one funny note. It was kind of like a farm venue setting. Very cool place out in Western Illinois. However, I thought it was funny blaring some Marilyn Manson in a in a barn, very kind of, you know, country looking theme. But, you know, the music all throughout the night was various mix. But I just thought that was funny. A little contrast to the visual, to the audio. So, all right, let's take a look at what's on tap next year. We've got another scrimmage coming up Tuesday. So hopefully some more highlights. Maybe you see some other guys kind of step up. And, you know, drop some sort of notable moments here that we can discuss around next time. And then Wednesday, practice. Don't think they're scrimmaging then, because Thursday, Ron, preseason hockey is hashtag back in Chicago. Hawks will host the Blues at the United Center. Everybody knows St. Louis blows.
Facts. We like to say it over at Cubs on Tap. It's FTC. In this case, it's FTB. And you can already infer what that means. Johnny, it's going to be nice to have Blackhawks hockey back. I don't give a damn if it's just preseason. I'm itching to get to one of these preseason games. I'm already eyeballing the living piss out of the schedule right now and trying to figure out which one makes the most sense to get to. But it all starts Thursday, and it's going to be fun to watch. And it's a home game, so you know, I think the one thing for people to keep in mind as these preseason games come up, home games, you're going to see the big names. Away games, it's when you're going to see the kids and some of the bubble guys play a little more. So keep that in mind. If you're trying to get out to the UC, you're more likely to see Connor Bedard if you're getting out to the UC for a preseason game than you would be if you're trying to go on the road and, you know, venture down to St. Louis or up to Minnesota or something, or even go to Detroit because they'll play a game there on October 1st. Because let's be honest, that's probably going to be the sporting event in Chicago that I would much rather watch than the other product that's going to be taking a field in the city of Chicago on October 1st here this Sunday. So keep that in mind. But Johnny, we're close.
We're close.
I'm ready.
We're very close, Ron. Like you said, a breakdown if you want. I wrote a little preseason primer that contains all the schedule along with the broadcast info. Go check it out on tapsportsnet.com. Just click on that Blackhawks tab, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see it about, you know, the Connor Bedard and preseason looking, feeling much different. That was kind of the route that I took with it. But I have all that info in there. There is one game that is not on TV, and then there is one game that is not on radio. So if you're going to look for the broadcast, go check it out on tapsportsnet.com.
And the game that's not on TV is, of course, the Saturday night game that's coming up this weekend, Johnny, and I'm pissed as a result.
Right, yeah, that sucks. So maybe listen to John Weideman on the radio call. We'll see what happens. All right, Ron, that's about it. We'll do it for this Hawks Happy Hour. We appreciate everybody that joined us. We hope you go and jump in the YouTube comments next time. We had a great discussion going on in here. Thanks to everybody who did that. But that's youtube.com/ontapsportsnet. Go check it out. Press the subscribe button. Press that little bell so you know when we go live. And then give us a follow on the socials as well. You can we'll post our shows there too, at Four Feathers Pod and at Untapped Sportsnet. And as always, untappedsportsnet.com is a home for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. That'll do it for this episode of Four Feathers. Until next time, Ron, let's go Hawks.
Let's go Hawks, baby.